Welcome to the MadTech podcast special from ExchangeWire, a weekly deep dive into a pressing industry issue.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of the MadTech podcast, where we dive deep into a topic that's impacting the digital advertising industry. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Matt Bourne, who is Communications Director at the Advertising Association and co-author of Trusted Advertising. I have the book here. One second while I just show it to camera. Trusted Advertising, How to Harness the Value of Trust in Your Brand. Thank you very much for the coffee. It's definitely worth a read. Obviously, the whole topic of today is around trust in advertising, and it's a huge, huge topic, an ongoing topic. And so before we kick off, I want to get a brief intro from you, Matt, as to kind of what your background is and also what the Advertising Association is and what their role is in the industry.
Sure. Okay. Well, first of all, thanks a lot for the invitation to come in today. My background is I've loved media since I was a paper boy, right, when I was 13, and I studied it, and I've always wanted to work in it. And I specialised in comms, you know, as soon as I left university. But I guess what I really was interested in was how media is funded. And over the course of my career, I sort of gravitated more and more towards essentially understanding commercial media operations and how that works. And 9 years ago now, I was approached to take on the role as comms lead at the Advertising Association. And someone I was very close to at the time, a non-exec director of the business I worked at, told me that it would be my perfect train set.
I like that.
And I have to confess, it is, because I really, really enjoy doing the role and what the Advertising Association does. So the simple sort of starting point is to say that the Ad Association is the trade body that represents the industry to government. Mm-hmm. So when the government says we'd like to talk to the industry, the starting point is us. And we represent the advertisers through ISBA, the agencies through the IPA, the world of tech through the likes of the IAB, and media owners like a ITV, a Channel 4, a Mail Metro Media. So we're the collective. And really, that touches on absolutely everything when you think about advertising. And we're celebrating our centenary year this year.
Wow.
Which is a very exciting year for the Ad Association. And what I like to do is I like to think about back in 1926, there was a room full of advertising industry leaders, mainly men at that time. But they were the press barons sitting with the advertisers and an emerging sort of sector of the agencies. And they were all kind of discussing, is anybody checking whether this kind of revenue stream that's coming in, which is paying for the things that are appearing in the front of our newspapers and in the back of our newspapers, is anyone checking whether or not they actually stack up, that they do what they say they do in the ads? And so that led to the formation of the Advertising Association. Subsequently, that led to the formation of the ASA, in the 1950s, 1960s. Wow. And so it's really interesting to me that we sort of sit here today, 100 years on, and we're here to talk about, is anyone checking whether what's in the ad really stacks up? You know, that yeah. people can trust what they see, because we know that, you know, when people do, advertising works and it's a valuable service. But when they can't, then it's not as effective.
So trust is so fundamentally important that you decided to write a book about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. So what was born out of that? Kind of what made you think, right, we need to really kind of, it's also so multifaceted. There's so many different things that trust means. What made you think, right, this needs to be on paper? Obviously, you and you co-authored it with James Best CBE. Yeah. Like, so what made you both think this has to be written down?
So I'd previously written a book on sustainable advertising.
Yes.
Right. So, and that was about advertising in the time of climate change. And I did that one with Seb Munden. So I was then asked by the same publisher, have you got a second book? And I said to our chief exec, I think we need to write one on trust for two reasons. One is it's the AA centenary year and then it's a logical time to do that. But the other is, I think there is something happening in trust, which I don't think anybody's written about in connection to the industry. So we started by saying, you know, what is happening to trust in the 21st century? Because the structure of trust is being challenged, and there is a real change led by tech in who and where and how we trust. And that's having a very dynamic effect on advertising as a result, but not just advertising, everything. So the starting point was for us to really sort of look at trust in the 21st century, because we don't, and I say we as a sort of collective, the things that we've trusted for perhaps centuries that society has been built on are being really challenged.
Yeah.
You know, do we trust the church? Do we trust the royal family? Do we trust government? Do we trust the police? Things that, you know, a society is built on, they're being really challenged. Mm. Yet I stumbled across a quote by Chekhov as we were sort of researching the book, that which is, you have to trust in people, otherwise life becomes impossible. And I talk, you know, about sort of, I trust things that I need in my life. You know, I'm asthmatic, right? So I have to trust that the medication will work. I came to this interview on a train. I have to trust that that train is safe, you know, in order to get here.
Mm.
So I sometimes ask people to imagine what a world looks and feels like if you can't trust anything. And then if you picture that, and then I say to you, now, do you want your brand to be trusted by your customer base? Damn right I do, because I will win. And that's the conversation that we want to have, is in this time of disruption of trust, it is doubly important that you, through your communications and advertising as a brand, are trusted and trustworthy, because the evidence is pointing to it increases effectiveness.
So these are very almost deep existential things that you're asking a brand to think about when it comes to trust. Like, when you're telling a brand that's how you need to approach trust, are they kind of like, well, I just want to be able to sell some cornflakes? Like, do they understand the importance of how deep it goes, like how deep someone's trust in what they see in front of them, which is being tested every day, especially with AI as well.
Absolutely.
Do they understand how deep that notion goes and how important that is to people?
I think marketers are very aware of that. But it's interesting, when we interviewed marketers for the book and we said, you know, is trust important? They would say, yes, yes, yes. And then you'd say, are you measuring it? Maybe not. Mm. Maybe it's being measured through sort of brand awareness, brand saliency, favorability, share of voice. You tend to find that trust at the moment is probably something more tracked by corporate comms, and it's linked to reputation.
Yeah.
And it has a bit of a problem, trust as a KPI, because it's kind of soft and fuzzy and, you know, feels a bit warm.
And should it even be linked to reputation? Is that then putting the focus of trust in the wrong hands?
Well, I think it needs to be right at the core of the business and its conversation for the C-suite, which is, you know, I would gladly sit with any board and say, you know, fundamentally, we need to make sure we're the most trusted brand in our competitive set. That means everything that we do, but that includes our advertising. Mm. And this book is all about, okay, then if you believe that you want to be the most trusted brand, how do you ensure that your advertising is helping you build trust in your brand? And the IPA effectiveness data bank is absolutely phenomenal. And they've done some work since we produced the book. We sort of dug into the data bank and, you know, started asking questions of where were the trust building examples. And there's fantastic examples like some McDonald's, Tesco, you know, campaigns that over many years have rebuilt trust in a brand. But the IPA have done some analysis recently where they looked at a comparison of those campaign winners which either indirectly or directly built trust versus those that didn't. And what they found was that trust-building advertising campaigns outperform the average IPA effectiveness winner by something like 41%. So the analogy that we use is, if an IPA effectiveness winner, a standard winner, runs 100 meters in 10 seconds, the ones that build trust through their advertising run 100 meters in 7.41 seconds.
That's fascinating.
And then that means all sorts of things, because it means if your advertising is building trust in your brand, it's cheaper for you to acquire customers. It's cheaper for you to retain customers. And the really interesting thing is you can charge people a little bit more. There's a premium in being trusted, which is connected to the bigger picture of what's happening to trust in the 21st century. Because if it's harder to trust something, if you find a brand that you trust, you'll pay a little bit more for it.
Mm.
So there's all sorts of economic value in building trust in the brand and doing that through your advertising.
And that feels true for me. It probably feels true for you. I know that if there's a brand I trust, I will pay more to go with a brand I trust rather than one I don't trust. Two things come to mind. I'll touch on them both. One is measurement, which you touched on it, and that's a very, very important point. But the other one, every time you mention like brands that build trust like Tesco and McDonald's, I just think of Taco Bell in the US at the moment with the cyclospora outbreak and the lettuce and everything they're trying to do to rebuild what's going to be some very, very lost trust in giving people this horrible, like a bowel issue outbreak, like explosive diarrhea. Yeah. So we just talk about that on the podcast. Here we're going. We're going highbrow straight away. But they've got a lot of work to do in rebuilding that trust, and they're doing things like offering like cheap discounts on the food that don't contain lettuce. And you just kind of wonder, well, is anyone going to be... I think they put out a press release, and at the end of it, it said, we'll see you at the drive-through. I think everyone's thinking, oh, I don't think you will see me at the drive-through. Mm. It's going to take a lot of work for companies like that when they are hit with scandals, the trust aspect of that needs to be rebuilt from Taco Bell, which is such a trusted brand, is very, very challenging.
Yes, but it's not impossible, but it does take time. I mean, Tesco, you know, bear in mind, what was it back in 2014, perhaps earlier, was the horse meat scandal.
I was going to say, right? Horse meat, so, maybe think of that,
so,
yeah.
So it experienced its own challenge in terms of being a trusted brand. And, you know, we interviewed the Tesco team and, you know, Murray Bishop, who's the UK marketing lead. And, you know, the blunt reality is it starts with the product and the product quality. You can't advertise something which, you know, doesn't stack up. No. Advertising is a promise.
Yeah.
I'm promising you something. So if I get there and then that promise doesn't, you know, isn't answered, the advertising's kind of, you know, pointless, isn't it? You've got to get the product right.
Yeah.
So Murray very much talked about the kind of, you know, if you like, the whole way in which Tesco went about sort of rebuilding product quality, but then how advertising through brilliant creative storytelling, really smart use of media, and really clever campaigns has over a period of time rebuilt that brand to being a very trusted brand. So, yeah, so I think there's a way back for Taco Bell, but I think knee-jerking to cheap discount is probably not the way.
No, it probably isn't. But also, they are trying to at least be accountable and own it up front. Yeah, and there's a lot to be said for that.
The crisis comms is always be transparent.
there's always an industry for that, definitely. Yes. But that also, again, that brings me on the measurement side of things. Like Tesco is a great example. Like the advertising campaign they put out to try to rebuild trust after the horse meat scandal. It makes me wonder kind of what success looked like for them, how they then measured that. And obviously there's an element of, you mentioned earlier that trust is often considered to be quite a fluffy metric.
Yeah.
And what should trust measurement look like? Like what do you want to see brands do when it comes to actually kind of valuing trust the way they should do?
It's a really good question, because we couldn't really find, if you like, a trust metric out there. So I think there is an opportunity for that. The starting point, I would say the starting point is no sector is trusted the same, right? So the gambling sector is trusted very differently to the airline sector, right? To the financial sector. So I would look at that and think about, right, what's the level of people's trust in the sector that the brand is operating in? And then within that sector, you have a competitive set of brands, right? So then it's like, right, okay, well, who's the most trusted brands and what for? So airlines, you would say Ryanair's trusted for price. It'll give you the cheapest
price. And not
price.
Much else, yeah.
British Airways might be trusted for customer service, right? So the promise is different, but are they trusted and are they delivering on that promise?
That's a good point, yeah.
So I would look at the brands within that. And then there is also no customer trusts the same. A first-time customer trusts very differently to a long-term customer. They have a different trust expectation. So thinking about how you deal with that. Now, so there's a template. I can see a template of how you would think sector, brand, customer when it comes to trust and answering trust needs. So I would start to look at that. Mm. But I would also start to, I think, you know, audience research and really pre and post campaign has this built levels of trust in what the promise is.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because an advertising is a promise. Mm. So you know, that for me is probably the most important thing to be tracking.
And of course, it's the challenge you have with something like trust, which could be viewed as fluffy, as you don't want it to be on the reporting, on the media plan as another vanity metric.
No.
And obviously, brands are very, very focused on outcomes.
So, yeah.
And I suppose the Tesco example is another good one to draw back to, because you can argue that the creative campaign that they launched, they will have seen the results of that in the bottom line. They will have seen increased in-store purchases, increased online purchases.
Yeah.
There'll have been a direct correlation between an advertising to try to build trust.
Yeah.
But it was only focused on trust. The next part of that is, how do you also kind of sell your wares while trying to build trust in that process, and then measure if that's effective or not and how it affects outcomes? It's a lot for brands to think about.
Yeah, so I mean, Tesco, you know, they have 70 plus different kind of metrics.
Yes.
Which all ladder up into essentially a net promoter score.
Yeah, of course.
Which I think is probably the closest we found to the idea of trust. And actually the most successful, beyond the IPA effectiveness data bank, the most successful example of a brand that is using trust to grow and its advertising is supporting that is GiffGaff. Now, GiffGaff, you know, challenger mobile brand, but it's for a start, they don't talk about their customers, they talk about members of their community. So they immediately have a different mindset in terms of that trust that they're trying to create.
Mm.
1 in 5 new customers to GiffGaff come through friend and family recommendation. So that's 20% of their new business comes from a trusted recommendation, which is that net promoter score in action.
Yeah.
So I think that that for me, that one of the most dynamic shifts in trust in the 21st century is essentially the shift from top down to sideways, which has really, you know, been driven by technology and social media and the ability for peer-to-peer recommendation. And so you can see that in action with GiffGaff.
That brings me on to a really interesting kind of next point, which is around social and the influence of social media and influencers.
Yep.
I suppose Unilever is the brand that springs to mind instantly, because they are going really, really heavy on where their money goes, and their money is going into content creation and content creators.
Absolutely.
More than anything else.
Yeah.
And so are you seeing, like, what relationship does that and that shift into social, that shift into the influencer economy have on how trust is afforded, elicited, measured?
So when we started writing the book and we did the interviews with marketers, we were, I guess, surprised by just how much they were talking about influencers. And we anticipated, we were writing a couple of chapters called Does It Matter Where You Show Up?
Mm-hmm.
And we anticipated writing a section of one of those chapters on influencers. And we ended up writing 2 whole chapters just on influencers and content creators, because every marketer, and all of the indications are that more and more budget is going to be put towards the use of influencers or creators, depending on your position, to help build that trust and authenticity in your brand. It's a huge growth area, but it's also the newest area.
Yes.
Of advertising.
Yes.
And it's vast in terms of the numbers of influencers out there. We're not talking about 100 radio stations in a market. We're talking about tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions.
Yeah.
Some of them professional, some of them semi-professional. How do you understand? How do they know the rules? How do they follow the rules? What's the compliance standards? You know, what's how do you deal with an international influencer coming into the UK market? You know, I mean, there's so much.
I haven't considered most of this. So, yeah, it's very good points.
There's so much to sort of to grapple with. Yet the trend will be towards more and more use of influencers as a channel, more and more use of creators by brands to build third party recommendation endorsement. So the AA and our members and the ASA all need to grapple with how you continue to make sure that those ads are compliant and that people can trust them and that they're trustworthy.
And actually, the reason that it's such a growing industry is because of trust. It's actually been built on trust.
Yeah.
Advertising arguably hasn't, but this new form of advertising really, really has developed from the ground up on a trust basis, because I, as a viewer, trust this influencer, this, I suppose the term now is obviously prosumer, trust this person, and that's why that brand wants to put that their brand in front of me through this person.
Yeah, I think advertising has always been built on trust.
Well, yes.
And you know, I've got a very skeptical mate, and we were out chatting. He was tearing me apart for writing this book, and we were actually watching a football game while we were doing it, right? And it was halftime. Ad break came on, and I said, right, watch this ad break with me. And there was an ad break for National Lottery, and we watched the ad together. And I said, right, do you believe that if you buy a ticket for the National Lottery and that the numbers come up, you will be paid a prize, possibly into the millions? And he was like, yeah. I was like, so you trust the ad then, don't you? And I think, you know, the as seen on TV, the absolute stamp of the promise that's there, the structure around that, which is, well, if that's a lie, you get held to account for it.
Yeah.
Not just by the ASA, but more broadly. You can't lie in a TV ad. You will be called out for it, right? So that logic follows through in every form of advertising, whether it's a newspaper ad, a magazine ad, or wherever. And I think the interesting challenge is how we make sure that that fundamental truth continues in commercial content that's produced by influencers and creators.
Mm.
Now, the creators that we interview for the book, they want their content to be trusted because they know just how important it is for their audience to trust them.
They will be told
very clearly, you know, that's not real, that's not authentic, that's not trustworthy. So I think the vast majority of, you know, the creators and influencers are looking to build trust through their work. But I do think the research shows, the ASA has done brilliant research, that really to help that, including things like hashtag ad in all posts is really important. There's lots of concern about the algorithm behind the machine, you know, making that have less visibility. But that's not true. That's not true. You know, the IMTB, the Influencer Marketing Trade Body, has worked on that. So, you know, it's not true. So compliance includes hashtag ad, and people are comfortable with it.
Yes, they are, and comfortable calling it out when it's not as it should be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But you raised a good point about, like, brands might be fighting a bit of a losing battle. What does trust... It raises the question of, what does trust mean? What does trust look like? How do I know if I trust something? Because your mate, and it seems like probably me as well, believe we don't trust something. Well, actually, there's no evidence to show that we shouldn't trust it. The National Lottery example is a great example. So... Do people inherently have trust in advertising at the moment? And if they don't, do they know why they don't?
So we track it obsessively at the Advertising Association through our think tank Credos. The public's trust in advertising, people trusting ads, has grown from 30% to 40% in the past 5 years. Now, the other 60%, the large majority of those are kind of neither trust it or distrust it. And the percentage that are distrusting our advertising has actually reduced.
Mm.
I think there's a difference between people having a do you trust advertising versus do you trust this ad?
Yes, that's true.
There's a fundamental difference. And James would always say to me that, you know, it's good that people have a healthy skepticism towards advertising, because it is about selling you something.
Yeah.
Right. So there should be a little bit of like, okay, but you're trying to sell me something. So, you know, I've got to, you know, so I think that's the interesting dynamic, particularly for influencers or creators, or, you know, somewhere like that. I mean, you know, one of the most powerful, I think, you know, experiences of advertising right now is in podcast listening. Right. And hearing that voice. I mean, radio has always been the theater of the mind. It's always been incredibly powerful. But to hear the host of a podcast that you trust suddenly then selling you something and doing it in amazing creative ways, I think it's really powerful.
Yeah. But it's almost very intimate, isn't it? Because they're right in your
absolutely.
Ear.
They're right, they're right inside your head talking to you about something. And I mean, that's it. I mean, it's an incredibly strong way of building trust in a brand, if you trust that podcast and that host.
Yeah, that's very true. I want to change tack slightly and talk about you have actually touched on this already, but obviously there is the trust in the ad that we see and what we're seeing. But there's also a problem, or there has been challenges in the past of trust about how the ad gets there in the first place. And so there's trust with the delivery of ads, where the ad is seen. You know, you mentioned earlier, like the short paragraph you're going to write about, does it matter where the ad is?
Yeah.
What does that look like? So what are we seeing in terms of trust and understanding of the advertising ecosystem and how that ad gets there?
Yeah.
Because that goes back to distrust in online ads specifically that follow around the internet and kind of the journey we've been on there. Yeah. You know, you talked about the bookmark of the centenary of the Ad Association and the journey we've been on there. There's been a rough sort of decade or so in the middle of that that was specifically online and programmatic advertising. That's, you know, a lot has happened to improve that. But has the trust grown or worsened along that journey?
So trust generally is building up, particularly in younger people.
Yeah.
Across all channels. But online advertising is wrapped up at the moment in a bigger challenge about sort of the online experience. So the latest research by Credos, our think tank, is talking about, for the first time, the public having a low-level sense of vigilance when they go online. And the way I would describe that is that they're going online with their fists up.
That's how I
would say it's very difficult to sell something to someone when their fists are up.
You're on the back foot the whole time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So and that, to a certain extent, is driven by fraudulent advertising.
Yeah.
So when we see what builds people's trust in advertising, first and foremost is the creative quality of the work. Just make great work. The second thing that builds trust is the social contribution, the sense that the what people believe is important in the world to them is seen within the advertising as well, which is where things like representation and sustainability start to figure, you know, in terms of can I see a reflection of the world that I want, that I believe in within the ad? So the social contribution is really important. But the things that drive people's trust down is bombardment, is just being hit with too many ads and a repetition of ads. But it's also fraudulent advertising, which has emerged from really nowhere in the last sort of 3 years or so, to the point where people are, well, even if it looks like it's from a brand that I know, can I trust it, because it's come to me and I need to check that source. Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest, and you know, from the Advertising Association's perspective, we're involved with government in something called the Online Advertising Task Force.
Right.
And that is an industry initiative in partnership with DCMS, which is specifically about tackling issues around areas such as fraudulent advertising.
Interesting.
Because it's got to be addressed.
Yes.
It's got to, because it has a deeper effect on people.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that we do live in a world at the moment where trust is needs to be really fought hard, like earned hard, and it's challenging to do so at the moment. With a lot, you mentioned that started this, like all the different things that build trust, and so advertising is just kind of one aspect of that. That we can't do the trust in government, trust in police, trust in everything else. This kind of plays a role in that. That there's general low level trust anyway across a number of things. What role does emerging technology, so AI is the big thing I'm thinking about, have in this? Because first of all, AI is moving so quickly mm-hmm. and bad actors are using AI to try to increase the levels of fraud and increase the levels of malicious software and hardware that people have access to. But also from a creative perspective, we're seeing a lot more use of AI now. And there's a lot more kind of ads where you look at an ad and you go, it feels a bit uncanny valley. Like, is that, I'm thinking about some Trivago ads and eToro ads that I see on yep. the streaming platforms all the time. What impact is that having in the levels of trust that exist from a kind of from the back end perspective of an ad appearing, and also from the creative aspect? We've seen huge backlash from Coca-Cola, for example, with their AI ads. Less backlash in the UK version that had animals, but a load of backlash in the US version that had people. And so I'm fascinated to kind of see what the stance is there.
So it's very, very, very early days in terms of the public and yeah. their reaction to the use of AI in advertising. So, you know, we're building that into our study and looking at, you know, how people feel about it. It's interesting you draw the distinction between, say the use of AI for animals and use of AI for people. I think there's a very, very intense conversation taking place at the moment within the industry, not just in the UK, but at the EU level, around labelling and the labelling of use of AI in advertising to help people see where and how. But, you know, effects and special effects in advertising has been used for decades, right?
Yeah.
So I do think we need to be very cautious about how much we label the use of AI in advertising. We interviewed some brilliant people for the book. I spoke with a chap called Daniel Hume, who's the chief AI officer at WPP. And when I spoke to him, he did a thought experiment on me.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'll sort of try and relay. So imagine that we're running a taxi business, okay, and we are going to use AI to help us run that taxi business. And we put the AI in control of our kind of marketing and communications, and we say to it, okay, increase the profit. So the AI goes off and does its thing, and what it's discovering is that it can see things like battery levels within the mobiles that people are placing the order on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it can see that if people's battery levels are lower, it could charge them more, because they're more desperate, if you like, for that taxi. It can also make a judgment call, you know, day or night, and it can see that, you know, late at night with a lower battery level, it can charge even more. And then it can probably make a good guess as to whether or not that person is male or female, whether they are with people or if they're on their own. So the profit motive would be perhaps that there's, you know, the target customer for optimum profit might be a young woman, late at night, low battery charge, we can charge her the most. So the question Daniel sort of was posing to me was, what do you want your brand to be trusted for? Because the AI doesn't have intent. It will just do what you instruct it, right? So we could say, well, we want our brand to be famous for making sure that people get home safely. And that what we're going to do is we're going to prioritize, when we see these data signals coming through, a taxi that arrives with a charging bank so you can charge your mobile. And that's our promise. Or we could just go for the profit. It's up to us. So, and I think that sort of the use of AI is really down to how we as people choose to use it.
It's very true. Very true. You've painted quite a dystopian picture there, really. So do you expect that? I'm fascinated to. What are your thoughts on AI in advertising? Because I'll be fascinated to see the stats when they come out from Predos, kind of what the public perception is on AI. Because I think that it's also probably changing all the time. AI slop has a big part to play in this as well.
Yeah.
What people are seeing on social media platforms to then go and see it in an advert for a brand they're supposed to trust. I think everyone's questioning everything. And another reason why everyone's sort of coming to any platform with their fists up, as you said. How do you perceive it?
So it's sort of three things I would say. The first is I am concerned, if we remember that the most important thing is creative enjoyment of advertising that builds people's trust, I think the use of AI in creative production needs to remember that.
Mm.
Make great ads.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're using AI to help you make great ads, brilliant. But if it's substandard quality of ads that's just at a higher volume, that's not good. The second thing I would say is I think AI will force greater transparency in what an ad promises.
Because, that's interesting.
Because we'll be able to use AI to check it.
Yes.
So we'll be able to say, okay, you know, they're saying that they're sustainable. How sustainable are they? And I'll be able to check that promise, right? So it's going to force transparency through. I think the interesting emergent area is, you know, every single one of the big AI platforms needs to generate revenue, and they're not going to be able to do it just through business subs alone. So they're going to be introducing advertising into the AI LLMs. And I'm fascinated to see how that will work from a commercial point of view. You know, ChatGPT obviously has just introduced ads, and there are UK advertisers that are trialing that. But right now, if you go in and, you know, I've spoken with a couple of the brands that are doing it, you know, one of the things that they're wrestling with is when you go in and you organically ask questions about that brand, inaccurate information about that brand comes out.
Yeah.
Right? It's not accurate information about the brand. So I'm fascinated in how the advertising experience is going to be worked into the LLMs.
That's very interesting. I want to finish off asking a question about kind of what trust is and means. Mm-hmm. It feels like a weird question to end on, but bear with. So what trust is and means in the context of what it's going to look like as we go down this path.
Yep.
You know, AI becomes, LLMs become more prevalent in our lives, where it's the way they're created, the way they're delivered, the way they're planned, the way they're bought, all these different things, and the way they're viewed as well, ultimately, and how we interact with a brand going forwards versus what it looked like 100 years ago. And because there's lots of different things that make up why somebody might trust something. How is that going to evolve?
Well, I think, you know, we went back to the definition of trust and looked at the sort of, you know, it means, it's drawn from a Germanic word. It's dru, which means strong, firm. You know, we're talking about being dependable and confidence and having confidence in you. I think there's an evergreen truth. You know, the simple answer to trusted advertising is don't lie.
Yeah.
Right?
Simple as that, yeah.
Simple answer. The complicated answer is it's everything you do with your advertising. Mm. It's the creative quality of the work. It's the storytelling within it. It's the use of humor. It's the use of music. It's the use of people that are like me, so I connect with them. It's a representation of a worldview that works with me. And that's a very tricky thing to do.
Yeah.
It matters where you show up. Because, you know, there's lots and lots of research which shows that the messenger, i.e. your choice of medium, says a great deal about who you are and what you represent as a brand. So thinking about that is fundamental. I think where our sort of thought process is going is, you know, we've talked a great deal about the attention economy.
Yes.
Chasing after attention.
Yes, absolutely.
For the lowest cost possible price. And the net effect of that is bombardment, frustration, and ad blocking. So what we want to talk about is the trust economy. The most successful brands will win because they build trust versus their competitive set in what it is that they offer. Trust is very specific. Be really clear about what it is that you want to be trusted for. And then find incredibly creative, powerful ways to tell people about that promise of what you offer. That would be where I would really sort of focus in on.
Yeah, that's interesting. And winning in this sense means every sense of the word. And ultimately, yeah, it means it will help your bottom line.
Totally.
Which is
absolutely
what it boils down to.
Comes back to the business performance. Yeah. Your advertising will be more effective. You can do more with that advertising.
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely fascinating. I've really enjoyed this conversation,
but we are
out of time. Thank you so much, Matt, for coming in and joining me today.
Thank you.
It's been really, really interesting, and hopefully everyone's kind of got a very different perspective on trust. I certainly do. I found this fascinating. Thank you so much for coming in, and thanks everyone for listening and watching.
Thanks for tuning in to this MadTech podcast special. We'll be back to discuss another hot industry topic soon.